Okay, ladies, we're going to get started, but what I'd love for you to do is to come into the center a little bit, because we're going to make this, we've got, I don't know, 200 some chairs here, but we're going to make this an intimate discussion on innovation. All right. So coming after Lupita and Hillary is a little bit daunting. And to add insult to injury, I've been fighting a cold for about 6 days, and it's hitting the laryngitis stage. So not only am I, you know, got a cough drop and some water, but I'm going to ask that you really participate with me in a discussion. The motivation for this talk is the idea of innovation, and that there are principles of innovation that we can kind of apply to our life and to our work. And innovation has become probably more important to me because I now hold the title of Chief Innovation Officer. And it wasn't a title that I necessarily wanted. I'll tell you a little story about how it happened. And by the way, my name is Jessica, so you probably knew that already. But I started out my career working at, I finished my PhD in economics, and I started working at a think tank in Harvard Square that State Street has called State Street Associates. And I have some of my colleagues here. Yay. And we love it out in Harvard Square. And it's great because we get to build really interesting products that our clients like, hopefully they love, and that make a difference. But over time, we as a company decided to build an entire unit focused on data and analytics and new types of products. And as my role expanded, one day my boss sort of said, you know, I think that we need to move you into a new role, give you these extra sort of areas of focus, and I think you should be called the Chief Innovation Officer. And my first thought was that all my PhD friends would sort of laugh at me if they knew that I had this title that sounded a little bit like I needed a wand and some fairy wings and a little bit of pixie dust so that I could go around and tell people to innovate, you know? And what does that mean? So over time, though, I've come to really love the title because it feels very expansive, right? It kind of has no borders to it. It sounds like we could kind of do anything. And that is really fun. So as I thought about what innovation means to me and what are these principles of innovation that I can bring to the teams I work with and to really help us think about how we can do our job better, there were about five major sort of principles that sort of came to mind. And these principles were not things that I made up, even though I think I might have gotten there if I had thought about it long and hard. But if you go and Google principles of innovation, you have pop up things like the Google principles of innovation. And there are other sites where people have sort of put a stake in the ground and said, these are our principles of innovation. So I'm going to talk about five of them. But what I want to talk about is not just how you think about them in terms of maybe building product or being, you know, an e-commerce site or being a startup or even in our, you know, our work life, but just also in our daily life. And I want to tell you some stories maybe about some of these principles and how they have really made a difference to me. So the first one is to look for ideas everywhere. All right. And I think we often think that we have to focus on kind of expert opinion and think about our area of expertise and read up on that. But reading a diverse amount of material and looking for ideas sort of all over the place is actually really impactful. And I'm going to tell you about an idea that came to me in a funny way that has really had an impact in my life, and that is a conversation I had with my kid's pediatrician. I have twins, a girl and a boy, and they're 11 years old, and they are absolutely fabulous, just like Hillary said about her granddaughter. You know, they're perfect in every way, except when they're not. And having a girl and a boy is like having a little gender experiment at home, you know? So we go to the pediatrician when the kids are two, and I can't talk enough about how wonderful they are, so I'm going on and on about, you know, my daughter is this and my son is that and all these things. And my pediatrician just says, whoa, stop. Wait a second. You know, a lot of these things that you're saying, like he's really good at this, she's really good at that, you know, that can all change. I don't know if you even really want to talk that way. Are you not maybe limiting your idea of who they could be? And maybe even talk, you know, so I started thinking about this, okay? So he kind of gave me some examples about, you know, if you always put trucks in front of your son or if you always put pink stuff in front of your daughter, you know, maybe they gravitate towards that, but why assume? And so why, you know, why are you kind of talking like, you know, so-and-so's good at this and they're maybe only going to be good at that? And that was a very profound kind of statement that made me keep thinking and thinking and thinking. And I think about it to this day, because how many times have you said to yourself you're not good at something? Like pretty much every day, right? And instead of thinking I'm not good at something, what about I'm not great at that yet? Right? And I still hear my own kids tell me, well, I'm really good at math, but I'm not good at writing, or I'm really good at this, but I don't think I'll ever throw, you know, a football as well as so-and-so. And I constantly tell them, don't limit yourself. Maybe that's today, but you never know what's going to come down the path. So I think, you know, the ideas that come from anywhere can really be kind of big ideas that make you think about how you approach your life, and they can be small ideas for how you can improve efficiency in your team, or they can be an idea about how you could relate to somebody differently that could really change your relationship. So I think that that kind of principle, this principle of look for ideas everywhere, don't limit where you get interesting input and where you get inspired, and where you might even find the next big idea that you use at work or at home. The second one that I want to talk about is think big but start small. So think big but start small. We've heard about that, I think, many ways. Often with exercise, you know, don't go out and try to be totally fit tomorrow. Go out and walk for 5 minutes and then try to do it tomorrow too, right? And Lupita mentioned this, take a step forward, take a step forward. That's exactly the concept we're talking about. And this really hit home for me when I first started working at State Street, because, and I think there's two actual times when this happened in my life where I was asked to do something that felt completely beyond me. Okay, so I come into State Street, I needed to build. They sort of look at me and say, as though this is going to be easy, here's this huge database of data and some programs that might be useful in this file called the Lenny file, and you need to build this indicator of institutional demand. Okay, and for those of you, it's literally like big institutions buying and selling securities, and can you kind of aggregate that up into some high-level index that would tell you about demand for certain countries' securities or sectors, etc. And it was literally me. I was sitting there alone, and I didn't know how to program in MATLAB, and I have never programmed in SQL, okay? I didn't know any database languages. And I thought, okay, I can freak out, or I can figure out how to learn it, because I had to do this before. And when I had to do that before was when I started my master's, and I decided I wanted to do a master's in economics. Actually, it was in agriculture and applied economics, because I thought I wanted to go into international development. And I didn't know calculus, and it was required. And I sat in my room and taught myself as much calculus as I had to know to do my econ course. So I knew I had done something really hard before that, and that I could sit there and kind of with help do it again. And I guess the thing that was very clear to me is that I had to just take one step at a time. And it felt very insurmountable, but if I took a measured pace, I'd get there. So think big, but start small. I got some amazing things from just starting with those first steps. The third point I want to make about innovation principles is focus on the user. Google, Amazon, and all, you know, every app you use, I don't know about you guys, but Candy Crush or, you know, some of the things you can't even turn off and feel very addictive, maybe they understand us too well. But focus on the user, to me, means something more. It means, like, you actually have to, as Hillary said, put yourself in somebody else's shoes. You have to empathize. Okay, so that's something that, as women, we're actually pretty good at. We're pretty good at empathizing with other people. And that idea of focusing on the user has been really, I think, inspirational to me along the way and continues to motivate me as well. Because when you sit with a client, if you can really think about them, not you, it has a huge impact. When you are managing people and you can think about them, not you, it has a profound impact. And that, I think sort of a service mentality, wanting to serve others, wanting to really understand their needs, those things can be very profound. And so this innovation principle of know your user, or focus on the user, again, continues to really motivate me. And one other thing I guess I'd talk about there is somebody who has been hugely inspirational to me, and that's my 90-year-old grandmother. I was just in Minneapolis over the weekend. I was telling some of the women down here that on Thanksgiving Day it was 7 degrees. I caught my lovely cold there. It was, but we were there for her birthday. Okay? So she turned 90 years old, and she still looks amazing every single day. And she always has a smile on her face, even though, you know, she has as many aches and pains as you'd expect out of a 90-year-old. But as people talked at her birthday party, and a 96-year-old woman got up. It was pretty amazing. But as people talked at her birthday party, they talked about how she always made them feel special, how they really felt loved for who they were by her. And that sort of unconditional acceptance of other people, that amazing empathy that she had, touched people in some very profound ways. And I don't think it's very different at work, and I don't think it's certainly different at home, right? I think that, you know, that knowing or focusing on something other than ourselves, focusing on others, on the user, can really be impactful. The fourth innovation principle that I'll talk about is to fail well. I did a TED Talk last year, and I have to say it came at a very tough time in my career. We had just started this new division. We had brought in a bunch of people, some from the outside. One of those individuals was actually somebody I was fairly close to, but our relationship had been really strained since we had become colleagues. And there were times as I was thinking about that TED Talk, and the great women I work with at State Street in marketing were like, "You've got to do this." There's Rosie over there. "You've got to do this." You have to do this TED Talk. You have to put your hand up. You've got to do this. And you've got to do it about data. You know about big data. You've got to do it about big data. And literally, I kept thinking, I don't see myself as a data scientist. I don't feel 100% comfortable talking about data. And I had this colleague who was telling me at the same time, you're right, you don't know anything about this area, and if I were you, I'd be really nervous talking about it. And I, part of me was like, I can't believe that I'm hearing this lack of support, and I'm really afraid. And I wrote this TED Talk out, I think, 25 times. I wrote version one and thought, ugh, I can't do this, version two, version three. The TED people come in and they start mentoring you, and they gave me all this advice, and, you know, 15 versions later, I finally had a version. I still didn't feel good about myself in that talk. And I decided I'd just give it. And it didn't, you know, I gave it, and I thought I did an okay job. I didn't think I did great. I thought I did an okay job. But the one thing that I did do is I talked about my experience, and I talked about things I knew. And what's been interesting is that feeling, I felt some failure in that experience. But even in that, what came out of it was interesting. I started getting these emails from big data firms saying, we think just like you. You kind of put in, you know, simple terms stuff that, you know, we try to tell people every day. And it ended up being a very positive experience of me realizing that, you know, having my own voice and not listening to somebody else's is probably the best plan always. But that even when you have those feelings of failure, it's about learning, right? Learning about what works and what might not work and the like. So attitude is really important, and failure does mean that you're learning something, and we shouldn't be afraid of it as much as we are. The last one I want to talk about, and then I want to open it up to the audience, because I want to hear either, you know, some of your stories of innovation or inspiration in these areas, or stories that you might have, or questions you might have of me. But the last one is have a mission that matters. This comes right from Google. Have a mission that matters. If you don't stand for something, if people can't see you reveal yourself to them, if they don't have some way of touching who you are, they're going to have a very hard time understanding why they should follow you or why they should be connected to you, or why they should get behind a project you're working on, etc. So being able to really express your mission, being confident in sharing who you are, really articulating those things that are important to you or to your team and those core values, those are, you know, they are like signposts that help people understand how you think and where you are. So I think those also, you know, having this mission that matters, having something that really inspires you is critical. And yet, again, it's another sort of principle of innovation. So just to go over those principles again, and again, if you go to Google or if you go to, you know, Pivotal Labs, which is an EMC company, or if you go to many of these startups, you know, they have their innovation principles, and you see variations of these everywhere. But the first is look for good ideas everywhere. Think big, but start small. Focus on the user, fail well, and have a mission that matters. So with that set of nuggets, okay, now I'd like to open it up. This is meant to be a very interactive session where you can ask questions or bring your own stories to the table. We had a truncated session because of the way Hillary, you know, thankfully she went over. That was not a bad thing. That was a great thing. So I'm going to welcome all of you to stand up and maybe share something or ask questions. Yes. That's fine.
I'm interested in if you are, I'm on the Innovation Acceleration team at my organization, so I wonder how your innovation effort is structured. What do you have a group? Is there you?
There's more than me, thankfully. So how our innovation our innovation team is structured is mainly two core research teams that prototype new ideas and functions. One focus more on investment research, the other more on risk analytics and big data. One's on the East Coast. That's our State Street Associates think tank in Harvard. The other we call the GX Lab that we've started up in San Francisco. And in both cases, they're very tied to the local universities. So here it's Harvard and MIT, and there it's Stanford and Berkeley. Around that, we have some business development people. We have some, call it people who do some consulting in the area of enterprise risk. So we have others as well, but those are the kind of core teams that build product and do research. Yeah. Yep. Sure. Can I just ask a clarifying question? On the first one, you just want to know about what's sort of going on in the startup community? Or?
Oh, yeah. Because when we mention innovation, then people first think about high-tech company.
Yeah.
High-tech company or startups. So why do you think they can keep innovation going on?
In large firms. Yeah.
Or do you have anything you can share with us, the new trends in that area?
Sure. You know, I think innovation is a mindset, so it really doesn't matter where you are, but large companies have the issue of administrative red tape, right, that at times makes it more difficult to achieve. So you might have to be a little bit more persistent in some ways, but not in others. So, you know, the one of the experiences I've had in trying to innovate with new products is that, unlike a startup, I have this amazing global client base to tap to ask whether or not these products are of interest to them and literally collaborate with them. And there's almost no financial institution in the world that if I really wanted to talk to them, I, you know, wouldn't be able to because State Street has all those connections. So if you're a little startup, you know, you might be scrappy, but you can't access the market anywhere near that, you know, that same way, right? A lot of people think that in a big company you might get capitalized better. I'd say that that's not necessarily the case. That somebody made the comment, or I had read at one point that somebody said that innovation is better starved than fed. And it probably is the case that having restricted resources is better, because in a big organization, if you throw a lot of money at innovation, you could get a lot of stuff that really doesn't matter, right? So being a bit lean is, you know, people may think that in a large organization, you just be handed a lot of capital, and that's not necessarily the case. So maybe that's a little bit more like startups than you might imagine, right? That you don't necessarily get the funding. But it really comes down to the leadership in a firm and how they nurture innovators and whether or not they create sort of protected spaces for them to do what they do, and that they really show backing. So I think large companies can do some amazingly innovative things. They just need the right framework and leadership to do them. And in our organization, you know, I think how we've tried to kind of keep the air fresh, as you say, is by, you know, creating some of these offsite locations, okay, so that people aren't kind of in the midst of the big corporate behemoth all the time. And there's a lot of other organizations that are doing that, creating labs or other smaller groups that can focus on innovation. I also think, though, that innovation really has to be a part of every day. You know, so we can think about innovation as something that's huge and life-changing, like the internet, but innovation can also be a simple efficiency improvement that makes people, you know, that much better at their job, or that they get, you know, faster at doing some sort of, you know, necessary step in a process. Innovation can be small and hugely impactful. It doesn't have to be, you know, huge. So I think we need more of that innovation mindset kind of all the time. Yeah. So Elena's question was just, you know, you get, if you start getting into an area of research, let's say, and it can just sort of take you away, and you can't pull yourself out to get to that nugget that can make a difference. I think that is the trick that you have to learn over time, right? Which is, how deep do you go? Well, how deep is necessary? And then how do you pull yourself up and focus through all the stuff that might be in front of you to the most important thing? It's a skill. It takes practice. And I think it takes, you know, it's like a muscle memory thing. So being able to dive into a project and then step back and say, okay, you know, what's the core idea? What's the next way forward? I think it's something that we should practice doing, and then test ourselves with our colleagues. You know, what do you think? So it's not easy. It's easy to get carried away. I think there are probably many of us who feel like reading, you know, an afternoon spent reading the newspaper and other things would actually be very, very nice to do, right? Or getting into research for hours and hours would be very nice to do. But often we don't have that luxury. So this is a fairly specific question to maybe our firm, but I'll try to generalize it. You know, I think success to me is being able to identify, well, one, success is being able to prioritize my time appropriately, okay? And I mean that in that there is a lot going on in our work lives and our daily lives, and everything seems important, but actually not everything is. So to me, success will be if I can look back and I have spent my time on the critical things to get some new products or new solutions through the door, generating revenue, and that time was wisely spent. That will be success for me.
About innovation mindset. So people say that schools don't teach us to innovate because what we learn is critical thinking and not necessarily design thinking. And I'm just wondering, what is your view on like whether critical thinking plays a part in innovation, and if so, how?
Predictive thinking, or I'm sorry?
Critical thinking.
Critical thinking.
Yeah.
Ah. Well, critical thinking versus design thinking. How many of you, when you think, actually think in pictures? Okay, so I'm in the same boat. When I had to learn these big, long proofs when I was doing my PhD, I'd literally have to write them out in steps. Then I would put them in like a diagrammatical form that was interesting physically so that I could memorize the picture of them in order to recreate them. Okay, so that's like how my brain thinks. But, you know, I think critical thinking is, well, how about this? Just like a portfolio of diverse stocks or bonds or anything else, you need a portfolio of brains, right? So we come into the world maybe predisposed to be design thinkers or to be critical thinkers, but at the end of the day, excellent teams will have both. And they'll be working together, right, to create a product or a solution or, you know, work with the client. So, to me, they're both strengths. It's just that we probably, because our education system focuses a lot on testing and the like, we've probably emphasized a lot the critical thinking and not as much the design thinking. So it maybe swaying or reweighting the importance of those is good. But again, I think team diversity is probably the most important aspect of, you know, creating.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah. Yep.
At the annual New York Times Magazine Innovation issue this year focused on failure as a critical or an essential part of innovation, and you mentioned fail well. In an institutional or corporate setting, how often can you afford to fail?
Well, a point I was wanting to make, you have now brought me to a point of being able to make. Okay, I have had many a session with colleagues and friends at work who feel vulnerable, right? Because they're in a new role or in a new part of the organization and the like, and they're afraid of failure. But they also have some conviction about what they feel that they're doing. The tolerance for failure sometimes isn't very high, right, in particularly larger organizations. And I think at the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, better to find yourself walking out the door with a pink slip in hand, knowing that you gave all of you and your conviction and your best, and you weren't trying to, you know, I guess, in any way get into the politics. Okay, so to some extent, you know, there's always failure, but there's always politics. And so it's more this idea of conviction, and better to die in the sword of conviction than to find yourself walking out of the door because you just played the wrong political game. So if you're really there and you're bringing yourself every day and you're doing your best and you fail, if people around you can't see the earnest, you know, I guess, conviction that you brought to that, you know, then you don't really want to work with them. So I think then, you know, if the unfortunate happens, you know, it's probably best to move on. But I don't know that it happens that often that somebody earnestly tries and fails and the people around them say, see you. I really think that there's a lot more, the issue's more when you're trying to game it, you know. Failure is a part of life, and we can't fear it. I think fear is the biggest hurdle to success for all of us, right? And fear resides in companies, and fear resides in people, and we just have to overcome that fear of and let ourselves at times fail. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Wenyi Jiani from State Street. I wonder, how do you balance the desire to continue to do the innovation, but certainly, you know, will consume certain resources versus that you have a limited budget?
So let me make sure I understand. So how do I
balance the, on the one hand, you want to continue
innovation
with,
and budget.
With your you know, innovative ideas, at the same time you have very limited budget?
Well, you live in constant frustration. You know, that is a, everyone has limited budget, okay, to do, you know, no matter what they're doing. Now, when you're doing innovation on a limited budget, what that means is that you literally have to think about prioritizing your choices all the time. Like, what is the most important thing I need to do next? Where's the, with an hour of my time or with a dollar of my budget? And you don't have the luxury of just saying, I'm not going to think about it because you can't afford it. Okay? And I would say it really is the case with both time and money. You know, you can't afford it. So it is meant for me having to become a much more decisive leader, I guess, where I maybe didn't like to say no to things before, and now I have to say no a lot more. Like, we don't have that money, or no, you can't take that trip, or, you know, all those sorts of things that, you know, it maybe wasn't so much in my nature, but has had to become more so. Why don't we take one here and then over here? Yeah.
Because we look at that as well, and one of the things that we, I worked with very risk averse organization, and one of the things we had to talk about was that possibility of failure. But one of the things that we recognized is that we have to differentiate between an idea that failed and a person that failed. And if the idea fails after you've invested time, you've got to drill down and drill down and drill down. So depending on how far you have to drill down, you can drill down substantially, and you get to the end and think, this isn't a good fit, or this isn't going to work the way we thought it was going to when we had the idea. So you can invest a lot of time and effort in an idea that still fails, but the person hasn't failed as long as you fail. Our watchword time, fail well, that fail smart, so that you have drilled down fully and explored it fully. You know why you're not going forward with the idea. It's the idea that's failed, but you know why. And then the goal then is to fail fast. So if it's going to fail, get to that point, get to that decision point as quickly as you can. But you really, if you're going to create a culture of innovation, you really have to separate the idea of a person and an idea, and the person fails. Or does the idea or the attempt or the
Did everybody hear that? No? So the concept was that, you know, idea, is it an idea that failed or a person that failed? And can you drill into the idea to see where the point of failure was? Right. Failure isn't just about, you know, it's a little bit more nuanced, you know, than just, fail fast would be really nice, but it's actually hard to do. Right? A lot of people have, you know, the more complex the problem. And then there's also the, how much time do you actually spend doing the due diligence on the back end? Right? Because you can, that's a rabbit hole at times as well. So there, you know, all of this is a little bit about being nimble, you know, and sort of pivoting as you see things not working, and being fairly flexible as you work on an idea. Because if you're too prescriptive, it's going to be a problem often. Let's go here and then over here. Yep.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Sitara, and I have a question about innovation in the arts. So I'm a singer-songwriter. And what's happening in the music industry currently is that we no longer have a lot of the strongholds that you mentioned of innovation. We don't have lots of mentorship. We no longer have people who actively invest in the artistry. And so what happens is artists are now like startups with indie labels. We are our own walking, talking business people, and we're lacking a lot of the fundamentals for these things. So what you have is a group of people who are naturally innovators, be them songwriters, musicians, but they don't have the business savvy to actively do what they need to do. They also don't have a platform. There is no music industry. So my question is, how does one innovate on a larger scale and also on an individual scale? Because there's only so much you can do as the individual artist to sustain yourself, but there's an overhaul of an entire industry that needs to happen.
So I relate to what you're saying in that, one, I'm a big supporter of the Berklee School of Music, and two, I'm a singer myself.
Berklee.
So go Berklee. You know, the music industry is an interesting example, I guess, of an industry that has already kind of been fundamentally changed by technology, right? But it's one of potentially many that will be. So the position you find yourself in might be the position many other people find themselves in over time. And I think, you know, there's sort of no going back. So you have to think, all right, what does it mean now to be a sole proprietor? And by the way, you know, you might feel very much like a sole proprietor in the music industry, but you're all sole proprietors of your career, okay? Meaning you are the, you know, I'm Jessica Inc., okay? And all the decisions I make about my career are really going to affect me in the long run, not State Street, right? Wherever I take my talent, you know, it will, or lack thereof for things, but, you know, it will, it follows me. So, you know, I think, again, it probably means finding teams, partners, people who are good at things you might not be, who can collaborate with you to try to, you know, get to the point of being successful. Because I think at the end of the day, the industry might not exist in the same way, but banding together as a community still does work. So I wish you luck, but I can imagine that it's difficult. Good question. You know, I think one thing that, so I'll give you a little story, okay? I was in a meeting with my boss recently with a possible collaborator, outside collaborator, and we were talking about an idea, and my mind went like 16 steps ahead, and I said, oh, and this and that and whatever, and he looked at me and he goes, and then he looks at the other folks and goes, that's why she's the chief innovation officer, but I'm running the team. Because he said, I want to know, like, what's going to happen right now. You know, what's going to happen right now? And he's a right now guy, and I'm a wow, okay, I can see this take 6 steps forward, right? I have to sometimes pull back, right? I the same person who some of you know, I'll tell you that the very first time when he was going to become my boss, we sat down at lunch and he said, you know, you've got a bit of a reputation for being, not very commercial. Now this is like, you know, somebody throwing cold water on you at a big bank. Okay. Not very commercial. And he said, I need you to get more commercial. And I said, great, but then I need you to get passionate about ideas, because you're not going to be able to lead the people I work with if you can't be. And he said, you're right. And we agreed to sort of meet in the middle, which has been what we've sort of done, okay? But I think, you know, the being innovative to me just means really being open-minded. You know, you read eclectic stuff. You think about different things, you know, and you kind of look a few steps in the future, at times at things that might not even seem very possible. But, you know, we've all got innovator in us. That's why, again, when they gave me the, you know, the chief innovation officer title, I, again, thought, imposter, I don't see myself as that, right? But, listen, we all have that. I think the big thing is just being able to kind of express your ideas. And so maybe part of it is just communication and being able to get people around a vision and seeing things that you see. How to actually see those things is just opening up, you know, to new possibilities. The ideas from anywhere, right? Okay, so how much time do we have? I'm kidding. Oh, the first e-citizen. All right, so I saw a TED Talk a while back, a guy who basically said, you know, when you're born in one country, and your parents were from two completely separate countries, and you have a kid with someone from another country, I mean, who's a citizen of what, right? So I think this idea of an e-citizen is maybe not going to be hard for my kids. It's maybe harder for us, right? That these funny things we call government borders, which just help us understand taxes and goods and services and maybe, you know, certain that they're more porous over time, that people are more global citizens. I think that probably happens. Again, you know, when my son picks up his iPad and starts playing Clash of Clans, God only knows where the other kids are. Okay, you know. So I think those are certain trends. I think the electronic currency thing is real. I think it has some profound implications for banking, but a lot of, you know, other things potentially. But it really is a question of how fast and what. Maybe it's not Bitcoin, maybe it's something else, but it will be interesting. You know, there are still the fact that people have to, you know, that we need central banks, that there are things as such as taxes so that we can get services, that governments issue bonds, means that we'll always have currencies, I think, but that doesn't mean that we won't have some electronic currencies too that cross those boundaries. So I don't know that it's going to disrupt everything. Like, you know, we're not going to settle on Bitcoin everywhere. But I think we'll be using it more. Yeah. All right, one last question, if people have it. Yes, in the back.
When you speak about incorporating, like, innovations and getting the word out, I lead a team where my staff, I have 22 staff, and it's varied. So it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's impossible for me to be and get everyone in the same place at the same time. So I have, like, lead managers that I work with closely, and they know my vision, and I have them kind of expressing it out, and I've used like mailboxes. Is there a better way or another way that I could really be able to get out the message and connect with those people who I don't normally see, like that work the overnight shifts and things like that? You know, how important, I guess, is that piece that I'm there delivering the message myself versus having people do that for me?
Well, I think you have the same problem I have. I suffer from the same thing. I've got staff now that are pretty much around the globe, which means that, you know, on any given morning I'm talking to someone in Asia, and, you know, it just is what it is, right? I do think at the end of the day the personal connection makes a difference. And so the more, you know, if you can cross those boundaries from time to time, make a special exception and be there, I think that does make a difference, because it's people that inspire other people. So I don't have any magic for the problem you have. But I would say that, you know, there is some technology that helps. And then there's just the, you know, the act of going out of your way, you know, to meet people from time to time. So, all right, I want to thank you all for coming. Hopefully, you know, all these sessions are meant to just give you a little takeaway. Think about these principles of innovation. Think about them broadly. Again, not just about what they mean for innovation, but what they mean for everything you do. And take care and have a safe journey home. Thanks.